So, would you introduce yourselves, please?
Yeah, I'm Murph.
And I'm Todd.
I'm Dan.
We're in a band called The Wombats.
So I'm going to hand you the microphone. I want you to each tell me, just for a couple of minutes, something about the band that's kind of missing in the bio. And if you want to lie, you know, that's kind of okay.
This is a massive lie, but we don't really have a very exciting way of telling you how the band name came about. So occasionally in interviews,
to
amuse ourselves, we've said that my uncle won the lottery in the UK and went travelling to Australia, where he adopted a pet wombat and, you know, became very close friends to him. And we ended up going out there and playing with the wombat ourselves, hence the band name. I think we intended to change it at some point, but haven't done yet.
We literally did our first gig, and then I think we did another gig based after that first gig, and it seemed like our mindset was, oh, well, people have seen us as the Wombats now, you know, yeah, all three of the fans that we've got. We don't want to, like, if we change it might confuse them, so...
All three of the fans.
We definitely won't change it now, I don't think.
Today, when people talk about pop music, we know what they're talking about, right? They're talking about the Katy Perrys and the Lady Gagas and all of that. But when we are talking about pop music, we're talking about an entirely different thing, are we not?
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of, you know, like, pop music seems to just, it kind of describes really catchy, you know, music that resonates with a lot of people. So I guess when we talk about pop music, I think we still predominantly think, well, these days anyway, it's mostly, it's just a good song, isn't it? A good catchy song, I guess.
But one of the things that's very easy for people to ignore is this is not a new band by any stretch of anyone's imagination. If I do my math right, the Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts was 2003. So this is 8 years. This is not like, oh, we'll form a band and we'll suddenly be playing Glastonbury, right?
Yeah, completely. It's we were together for 4 years before we... you know, signed a deal and the ball started rolling properly. I guess it wasn't until 2006 that we started, like, travelling outside of Liverpool, like, on a really regular basis. I don't know whether it's... I think bands in Liverpool in general, it takes a bit longer to be able to break out of the city, whereas bands from, like, London are kind of already surrounded by the music industry. And, you know, to get shows down in London at first and in Manchester and stuff took us a bit of time, but... it's definitely not been an overnight process.
You released your first single in Japan, right?
It was just like a collection of demos, I'd say, like an album, which we kind of like recorded ourselves in.
But it was never released here?
No, it wasn't released anywhere else. I mean, you could get it on import, I think, in the UK, some places. But yeah, it kind of like, because we didn't have a record deal in the UK, we kind of, oh yeah, this label gave us like $1,000 to record it. So we did it ourselves, and it was like a lot of fun doing it, and it was quite like, yeah, we learned a lot from it as well, I suppose. When we recorded the real album, we kind of knew a lot about how to record and how we wanted it to sound a lot more. And
it made our first proper album better, I think, from us doing that. And also, it definitely did kind of, you know, raise our profile a bit. People all of a sudden were like, who's this band from Liverpool called The Wombats who, you know, have released an album in Japan and have played in China and all this? So it all helped towards us getting our first deal.
Do you think that doing a song like, come on, what's the song I'm going to bring up, automatically got people thinking this was going to be a certain kind of band?
There was a lot of love towards it when people first heard it, and then there was a lot of kind of hatred and how dare they use, you know, the Lord's name in vain, etc., like that. And I think Peter Hook posted something on the Joy Division MySpace saying, you know, how much he loved the song, yeah, and things.
And then posted a video.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of like got all the haters sort of like, that's kind of scared him away, I suppose. Yeah, a little bit.
We actually played with Peter Hook as well in Newcastle one time. He got on stage with us and did a mean bass solo.
They did like a proper like Joy Division, you know, New Order sort of sounding like bass solo on top of Backfire the Disco.
A gold record in the UK or a top 40 record in the UK, if it, back in the day when people were actually buying records, sells you 300,000 units and nobody suddenly massively gets rich. So is this the moment to conquer the United States, and do you really give a shite?
We definitely
we're up for the task.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just talking about it before, actually, and it's kind of nice to be in like an attack position. Yeah, that's what it feels like. It was like we got.
I think what Tor means by like attacking is obviously just everything's new and like fresh, and it's the early days for us over here. We've only really done one like 2 week tour over here. We've never given, you know, a lot of time to really tour the whole country because it's so big. Obviously, it takes a long time, a lot of money, etc. And on this album, we want to make it a priority and, you know,
build it brick by brick. Yeah.
Brick by brick.
So far, we played New York the other night, and that was a sold-out Bowery Ballroom. And LA the other night in the Troubadour was, like, sold out. So it's definitely going in the right direction. And it's really nice to play the intimate gigs again. I think we all, you know, we like... you can see everyone in the crowd almost. And sometimes on the massive festival... Obviously, massive festivals, you can't really... It's like one big... just kind of throbbing mass of people.
But this was all intentional because you spent 3 years working on this record, right?
Yeah, I mean, it took a lot of time to sort of like find the sound for this record, I think. Yeah, it, like the first few songs that we wrote, that sounds quite different to the album, I suppose. It was a lot heavier, it was almost grungy, and then we went to this like sort of more electro-y sort of period of the writing process and kind of like found the happy medium, I suppose.
This album works as an album. You had four producers, so obviously you brought the producers in for a purpose. You didn't bring them in to craft your sound, you brought them in to do what they do, right?
The reason the album sounds like cohesive is because we almost acted as executive producers throughout. We kind of knew the sound we wanted. All the demos we'd done were, you know, 99% there. It was just that the best thing with all these producers was that they can make the sound of, you know, such good quality. They have all the amazing equipment, and they any little tweaks that we needed to make, they were straight on it, and they acted kind of like quality control.
I think the fact that we had four producers kind of like makes the album more interesting as well, like sonically, because obviously like all four bringing completely different things to the table. Having us obviously doing the what can I say, like the hard work, I suppose. Because a lot of the demos sounds quite similar.
Pre-production. Yeah. The first producer we worked with was Jackknife Lee, and I think we were a bit more, as you say, he has worked with, you know, REM, U2, and all this, so we were a bit not scared, but we were a bit nervous about how it was going to work. And you know,
reserved,
yeah. And you know, it took us, we actually ended up recording three songs with him, but only using one of the songs. We only used Anti-D, and then we redid Tokyo with Eric Valentine, and we ended up using the demo version that we recorded in Liverpool of Technofan, because we lost something along the way. And I think that it was like a process of learning for us as well, to kind of, you know, stick.
So that's part of the reason for the four producers is also that you got some things, but you also wanted to experiment a little more with some of what you got.
Yeah, I guess so, but mostly because all the producers, that they are like, you know, the top producers in the world at the minute, and they're all so busy that they only had short windows of time that they could fit us in for. So, and to be honest, we were, you know, it's been great because, you know, going on in the future, we've experienced a lot more with these producers, and we kind of I think we probably know what we want. So
you didn't completely give up your soul for rock and roll, but you know, it's one of those things where you're written up as your manager will laugh as I say this, but you know, you're written up as an indie band, right? So what you've done is you've gotten yourself kind of an indie label, which here in America is also kind of handled by sort of an indie group that just happens to be attached to your big label over there.
When we got close to, you know, the finishing of the writing, we were actually driving in Merv's car, and we sent a big list of producers that we, you know, we thought would potentially work for the kind of, you know, the songs and all the rest of it. And then the label had, you know, they wanted us to work with Eric Valentine, and
which we weren't sure about
at first.
At the
time. We weren't completely sure, given the kind of stuff he'd done before. We thought, how's this going to work? But it actually ended up being a godsend, and he was amazing. It kind of, yeah, we ate a lot of humble pie, and it was amazing. But the label, I think, because our first album was, you know, fairly successful, I think they were, you know, and they really felt strongly about all the new songs, and I think, you know, the heads of the label or whatever must have been confident that the songs were good enough to warrant, you know, as you say, like spending that much money on
so,
the big.
So they invested too.
You know, it's an investment, and I think there was a lot of more pressure on our shoulders because, you know, we were aware of the investment that was being put into us, and you know, we wanted to make sure the album was as good as possible, which is why it ended up getting delayed, and you know, it took us months more than we probably thought it would.
And the writing process as well, they were like really cool with, you know, giving us loads of time to keep writing, you know, keep like we had like 35 songs written for this album. And
you've kind of snuck here and played some of the big US television shows, the Jimmy Kimmels of the world and all of that.
We were very nervous before we went on. Someone mentioned a figure of like 8 million viewers or something, and I had to loosen my belt and strap a nappy in.
I don't think you guys are going to work hard enough over the next bunch of months. It's like minutes from now you're in Ibiza, right? Where you can do lots of drugs, right? Lots of psychedelics, very important. You can find Pete Tong, you know, you can do all the important stuff you need to do, right? You know, you got to find Pete Tong over there. And
It seems like, I don't know, how long did we tour our first album for? 3 years, pretty much. We were touring the album before the album was recorded, if that makes any sense.
I think we were one of the last bands in the UK to really, you know, use MySpace and stuff like that to help our cause, as it were. You know, we sold out a venue in Liverpool long before we were signed. And, you know, like 1,000 people, which just, as you say, would never have really happened back in the olden days, because how would it, back in the day?
236,000 people, right? Each had 10 friends, right? You know, that's a pretty good number, right? The other animal bands from Liverpool didn't have that.
I think, like, the exciting thing about the internet and Facebook and stuff is there's no real monopoly on music anymore, and it's not like... Whereas I assume in the 70s or whatever, it was up to a few various key people at radio stations to make a call as to what song was going to get hammered down people's throats. And now it feels like if it's good enough, it's going to get there somehow anyway, or rise to the top, and people have there's a lot of choice for people out there.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. So what we do is we take two of your songs as the bread, and then we take songs by anybody else you want to play in between.